Welcome back, everyone, to Wiredly Inspired. This is episode 11 with Stephen Taylor. Today, we have a very special guest, a longtime friend of Steve's. His name is Alex Cunningham. Not only is he a father to three beautiful children, but a husband, a hardworking process operator here in Alberta, and a cancer survivor. You guys are in for a treat. Please share, comment, give us reviews, and let us know what episodes you like, what ones you don't like. Give us suggestions, and remember that this isn't about us. This is about you, the audience, and the guests we have on the show, because it's their story and their impact that will ultimately give you the fuel that we want to fire up your life. I'm going to pass the torch to Steve, as it is rightfully so, and we know you will give some value from this episode. Take it away, Steve.
Thanks, brother. Well, you know, I obviously want to welcome my buddy here, Alex, to the show. We've been best friends for, oh, I mean, like 20 years-ish.
You're the best man at my wedding.
Yeah. You know, Alex and I first met playing soccer. We met at the age of 12. I turned 35 on Monday, so I guess that puts us at 23 years of friendship. And, you know, at first, just started off playing soccer, traveling around Alberta together, and then ultimately we kind of developed a friendship that way. And you know, I guess when you're playing sports and you know, having fun doing it, you're going to make some friends along the way. And Alex definitely became one of my closest friends through that process. You know, Alex is definitely, we stay connected. I live 2 hours away from him. We call each other consistently. He's somebody that's important in my life. Like Alex said, I was the best man at his wedding. You know, somebody I would, you know, my daughter loves, looks up to. She always loves coming to see his family and things like that. He's got a wonderful wife, Erin, three beautiful kids, like Taylor mentioned as well. You know, so we wanted to invite Alex to the podcast episode, and I'm so glad that Alex said yes to it, because he's got a really good story. You know, reason why I wanted to bring him on the show to share, you know his story, or a specific part of his story, is, you know, Alex got cancer years ago, and he's came on the other end of it, you know, healthy, back to being the husky Alex that he is, and also happier than ever. And you know, he can probably, there's going to be a lot of stuff that come up in this topic today. And, you know, I thought just sharing, so everybody knows somebody that has cancer or who has, you know, has had it, like, you know, it's a family member. Maybe you yourself had cancer. You know, we've known people who've passed away from it. And so obviously when one of your best friends, somebody close to you gets cancer, you on the outside looking in are obviously pretty, you know, you're pretty shaken on the outside. You know, it's a good friend. You're like, oh my goodness, is this, you know, what's going to happen? You know, you just hear that word cancer alone, and somebody having it, and somebody that you're close to, you know, it's just not something that you like to hear, right? That word is a very scary word in general. And you know, I thought, man, if it scared me as an individual, I didn't have it, you know, how did this affect my good buddy? And I know a little bit of the story, and I'm looking forward to just learning more about it and, you know, sharing some, you know, a good conversation with him. And, you know, we always want our show to be therapeutic for the guests that we have, especially when it's a heartfelt topic. So I'm hoping that this is, you know, good for Alex, just as it's going to be good for us to, you know, share this story with our audience. So, you know, without me rambling on anymore here, I just want to welcome Alex to the show and give him an opportunity to just introduce himself, you know, say a few words and get this podcast started. So welcome to the show, Alex. Take it away.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Taylor. It's good to be here at my home with you guys, talking in person, not on the phone. yeah, I've known Steve since, what, grade 6? Mm. So when I moved to Whitecourt.
Yeah, yeah.
Moved into the duplex with my single mom, and later on in the old trailer court, walking distance from you. So that's so nice. Many sleepovers in your bunk bed. yeah. Best man in my wedding.
Yeah.
Went to college together too. So, I mean, Steve and Taylor are fresh friends, and now I'm fresh friends with Taylor. I've known him for all of what? We're going on like 7 hours, folks. So.
At least.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Good time.
Love at first sight for these two. Awesome. Well, you know, I think to get things started, Alex, you know, I think obviously, we know that we're going to talk about the cancer. For me, I just kind of wonder what, you know, going back to that particular time, I guess, what was it that even, like, how'd you, when you went to the doctor, what'd you go to the doctor for in the first place? Like, how did this even come about? Like, just, all right, let's get right into it.
Here's the spiel.
Yeah.
My son's friend's birthday at the end of January in 2017. We're going bowling. We obviously get the greasy pizza and the sloppy joes from the bowling alley. And we come home that weekend and it would have been Saturday. I'm walking around like, oh God, that was bad. Got the stomach rumblies and just walking around all sore and painful. And that lasted for 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
Finally went to the doctor on Tuesday, thinking maybe my appendix had burst.
Oh, you thought it was an appendix at first?
It was in that spot of your body.
Oh, okay.
So he rushed an ultrasound. And when you're at the ultrasound, you normally never see a doctor. They usually take your picture, send it to your doctor.
Yeah.
Your doctor tells you what's happening.
Right.
They had a doctor come in and look at my pictures, and he said, yeah, that's tumor. They sent me straight to the emergency room. I actually swung by home, got a call from my family doctor, and he said, go to emergency, wait for your CT scan. And that was my first day of close to 11 days in hospital.
How old were you?
31.
Okay. Just to put into perspective for people out there.
Yeah,
That's very young.
Like, yeah.
Come on. We're all around that age right now. I mean, you guys are a little bit older.
Shut up, Taylor.
Come on. I mean, I'm, 29, but we're super young, right?
Like, yeah.
Really just getting life going here. And, a big scare like that happens, and it just so happens to be around health. Right, so
cancer doesn't know age.
No, it doesn't care.
No.
So I ended up with getting diagnosed with cancer, but the first 2 weeks before, the doctor comes into your hospital room to tell you have it. That was weird. So many things happen to somebody in such a short period of time, and you just kind of are in awe of our healthcare system. It actually works when you're sick.
Yeah.
Really, it does. I was taken care of by some of the best nurses in South Calgary I was in the emergency room for 8 days.
Yeah.
They didn't want to send me home because my tumor was pushing up against my inferior vena cava. It's basically the big blood vessel coming from your legs to your heart. The pain I was feeling.
Oh, that was the pain.
2-inch by 2-inch tumor pushing up against a big vein.
It was that big?
Yep.
Oh,
there was
wow.
A few other ones there too.
Okay, that's quite large.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yep.
I had no idea.
So that was the pain I had felt when I initially thought it was bad pizza. So I'm sitting in these emergency rooms in excruciating amounts of pain. But they know this tumor's there. I've had a biopsy by now, mm-hmm. which is a big fat needle in your back, and they take a piece of that. They take a piece of that tumor out, and they look at it and they make sure that it's cancer before they tell you, basically. So they do that, and you spend more time in emergency, and you get to know the nurses and the shitty food and. It's all true, man. You get your buddy to go to Timmy's to get you a ham and cheese sandwich. But I got really good at crib, hanging out in the emergency room, hooked up to a morphine drip every 4 hours, keeping the pain in check.
It was that painful they put you on morphine?
Oh, yeah. You could feel it. I was on about every 4 hours. You could start feel it wear off and the pain would come back. When that fourth hour hits, nurse is walking in with your bag of juice and they plug it right into your IV and
crazy.
A minute later, you feel a little better.
Crazy. So was there any wisdom, was there any knowledge that you gained while you were there? I'm sure there was, but from the nurse and doctor perspective, was there anything Alex, this probably happened because of this. Your lifestyle is like this and X, Y, and Z. You know what I mean? To kind of match it up. Because like I said,
30 is young for something like that. Like, it really is, especially when you're, you know, fairly healthy, fairly, you know, in shape, mentally and physically. And then all of a sudden it's just like, boom, you get riddled with this out of nowhere, you know, issue with your body.
I'd have to say to the professionals that I've used and gone with my oncologist and all my doctors, you're another patient. You're not poor you, poor this guy, poor that guy, or you're fat. They didn't say anything like that to me. It wasn't like you have a bad lifestyle and this is why you got sick. I actually developed some good relationships with the nurses. They're fantastic people to have around. They treat you pretty good if you treat them pretty good.
Of course, yeah.
And yeah, they see you all the time. I'll get to that later about that nurse. She was awesome. But no, to answer your question, no, it's you're a patient. You have a chart. This is what's wrong with you. They hand over their shift to the next person, just like anybody else would hand over theirs under any type of care. Yeah. You know, you see the same few nurses all the time. When I was there anyway, saw the girls that were on shift for that week, and then I was at a different hospital and saw the same girls for a few more days, and saw the same nurses at the cancer clinics and stuff like that all the time. So yeah, you get to see these people, and I wouldn't say you developed a friendship, but you definitely have a relationship. I bought my chemo doctors some Tim's cards on my last day, so I mean, there's that.
So that first little while there, you were there for 11 days, you said?
Yeah. Let's roughly do some math. I was in, it was the 1st of February, was the Tuesday of 2017, I believe. And that was the day I was all over town getting ultrasounds and sent to get that first CT scan.
So at first, all you really knew is that there was this tumor.
Yeah.
And they didn't, you know, there was no more real information given at that point. At that time, you didn't know it was cancer. It was just like, you got this tumor.
Basically,
did they know how big it was at that particular time too? Like,
the CT scan can show you how big they are. They can light them up.
Okay.
They can light them up with the fancy stuff we talked about earlier that makes you feel like you pee yourself.
Well, I don't know if the audience knows about this. What's this fancy?
Oh, right.
If you've never like pee stuff you're talking about.
If you've never had a CT scan,
I definitely have it.
They put an IV in your arm, so they stick your vein.
Yeah.
And they put this tracer in through your veins, so you glow a little bit during your scan.
Interesting.
So they can see all those parts of your body better. But the interesting part is, it gives you such a warm feeling in your groin, crotch. You literally feel like you pee yourself.
Oh,
and
wow.
I probably had 25 of these scans.
25?
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it all specifically based on
monitoring, seeing if they grow? Every time I had to go for chemo, I had to get a scan to see if what was happening.
Oh, an update kind of thing.
And then during rehab, my rehabilitation oncologist was sending me every 3 months.
Wow.
So yeah, I've had probably close to 20.
Oh, wow.
Unreal. That's a lot.
That seems like a lot. Okay.
For someone that has never had
any. Yeah, I've never had any myself.
It's like a fancy x-ray.
Right. Where my mind goes, man, real quick, where my mind goes is those 8, 11 plus however many days. I mean, do you recall what that talk track was in your mind? Like, what were you telling yourself? Because this is,
especially before,
this isn't
cancer.
Just a headache. This isn't a migraine.
Yeah.
This isn't a boo-boo.
Yeah.
Slap a Band-Aid on it. Like, do you recall what you were telling yourself? And the perspectives and all that mindset that you are giving yourself to.
Especially when you think you're going in for bad pizza.
Well, yeah. And this, you literally don't understand exactly what's going on, like the severity of it. So yeah, if you just can walk us through kind of that mindset, man, if you don't mind.
They don't keep you in hospitals if you're not sick. I showed up in emergency and I was there for 4 days and like, saw some weird people coming through that place. And that's...
So what was that mindset? What was that? What were you telling yourself?
So
you said you to go back where you were at, you said...
I was in emergency and I was sick. And they don't keep people sick in emergency for more than a day. You get sent home. You get sent to a room. I was there for 3 days. because they wanted me around all the closest doctors because of that tumor, all the closest nurses, until they knew exactly what was going on.
Right.
Then I finally got a room upstairs, got a little more comfortable, and I remember the day I was told I had it. I didn't cry because I already knew. Didn't necessarily know exactly, but I knew, you know?
You had that, like, you had a feeling that
you had a
feeling it was cancer at this particular time, or?
I knew I was super sick.
Yeah, you knew
something wrong.
Right. Okay,
so when she told me what it was, it could have been anything. I was ready for her to say whatever the heck it was and like, what's next?
Right.
My first initial thought was, what's next? Not poor me or how'd this happen or anything else like that. It was, what's next?
Mm.
And that's my first, she was like, what? I was like, please tell me what's next. They're like, well, you're going to go get your testicle removed because that was the cause of the cancer.
Oh, wow.
The cancer moved up into my abdomen. That's why it was stage 3 metastatic.
That's great. So how, and maybe this goes back to a little bit of what Taylor's asking. Did they have any idea? So you had to have had, I guess you had cancer for a while and just didn't know it. If it traveled, like you said, right? Or did they give any real information as far as that goes? Because like you have this tumor. The tumor came from testicular cancer. But I can't imagine it's like, all of a sudden you got this testicular cancer. 2 hours later, you got this 2-inch by 2-inch tumor, right?
No,
like,
it was,
there
it
must
was
be
weird. I had
quite a decent timeline for that tumor to actually travel and form and things like that. Did they provide any real information as far as that goes? Or was there anything that maybe you're like, man, there was something going on with me and I should have got it checked out way before then?
They can't develop a timeline unless you're being monitored.
Oh,
so they never
okay.
knew when it started.
Right.
But I'd gone in for a vasectomy in December, early December of that 2016. Doctor's pretty good, pretty close to your Johnson when you're getting a vasectomy, right?
Yeah, he's right in there.
He didn't say anything.
Okay.
And my oncologist, when they did my testicular exams, they just touch it like someone that's frigid. You know? That's
okay.
it. That's it. They just give it a little squeeze and they're like, yeah, that's a fouled testicle. If it's super hard,
mm-hmm.
bad. If it's soft, if it's got a little spring to it, you're good.
Okay. Okay.
So boys, do it right now. Get your sanitizer out. Give them a squeeze. Make sure they're not hard.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
So yeah. So even the vasectomy doctor didn't say anything 2 months earlier.
You know, what's funny. So we were talking about Tom Green before this. And if you remember, he had this song back in the day because he got testicular cancer. Squeeze your balls, tease your balls so you don't get cancer.
And I had the same cancer as Tom Green.
Yeah.
And Lance Armstrong. Same one. Same.
Oh, wow.
Same. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So you're in the party of legends.
Yeah. I don't know if Tom Green's a legend. But
no, he's a legend.
He's a legend.
He's a legend in a certain
category.
He's a
Canadian legend,
people.
Maybe.
That's right.
He's a funny guy. That's
love
sure.
him, man.
Let's not get too off track.
We'll cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
Wow. So, Taylor, we've learned that we should touch our balls more.
And sanitize while we do it.
Great point.
Even though they're our own.
Yeah.
It's just so amazing because, I mean, I keep going back to the... I mean, we know... And all three of us, we know that it doesn't matter how young you are. I mean, you can be diagnosed with something so far worse or much worse when you're even younger, or you're born with something even way worse. I mean, it doesn't matter. We're not going to go down that road, but
yeah,
it just always amazes me. It's just like, what caused that?
Yeah.
You seem like it's such an average, you know, just a normal person, you know, trying to live a good life.
You've only known Alex for 7 hours though.
Yeah,
he's not that normal.
Well, yeah, apparently not here. Let's keep driving the 7 hours here. Actually more like 14, I think. I mean, if we were to double it up here, but no, it's just amazing. It really amazes me. And, I mean, I got other stories of people I know in my life with, you know, not, you know, I guess you can say similar, you know, scares and cancers and health issues. And it's just, it amazes me. I mean, is it hereditary? Is it this or that? I mean, yeah. Did you do this one thing maybe one time
and it kind of just carried on. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Nobody's an expert here, but it amazes me. So it leads us to why we're talking about it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, now, if I can continue on to kind of where we are in the timeline. Doctor comes in, you knew it was something bad, but when they specifically say, you know, what, you have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go to that, not to maybe relive the full emotion, but can you go back to what that was like at that particular time when you're like, holy, like, you have cancer? And like, I've tried to put myself into that place and be like, what the hell would I be thinking at that time? Like, I'd be thinking, like, for lack of better words, I'd be like, holy fuck. Like,
I remember Aaron was sitting with me in the emergency section still. So we were it was day four or so.
Okay.
And the doctor came into my little screened off room and said, are you ready for this? Basically, I mean, you could see it all over her face. She said, you have testicular cancer. Aaron broke out crying. I stood there and waited, and she's like, you're going to go get a room. We're going upstairs for you. And I was basically, the feeling after that was kind of like, thank Christ, I know what it is.
Oh, really? You almost felt relieved, I guess.
Finally know what's wrong with me for the past week.
Right.
I've been poked and prodded and scanned and on morphine for a week and a half here. I'm going on 4 days here.
Yeah.
It felt like that long.
Yeah. That's right.
Right?
So, I guess.
But finally they say, hey, this is what you have. We can start treating you now.
Right.
So your mind switches from confusion to relief almost, because now you can go get the next step of the process, because I'm not the first person it's happened to.
Right, thankfully.
So I go upstairs at South Health Campus there, and I get a nice room with my own bathroom, cable.
And oh, you got cable too?
Yeah, man.
Damn.
Free Wi-Fi, and I wait for a room at Rocky View Hospital, because they do way better. I needed an orchiotomy.
Orchiotomy?
Yes, sir.
What is that?
That's when they remove the foul testicle from the scrotum.
Oh, that's what it's actually called. Okay.
Yes, sir. They don't. It's just not called get your ball removed.
Sounds like the danger zone, really. Wow.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
So Rocky View Hospital's got specialists that do this. So I was waiting for a room there.
Okay.
At South Health. And I was there for 2 days.
Okay.
Sunday of the Super Bowl, February 5th, I get transferred.
Who is playing in the Super Bowl?
Fuck Brady.
Yeah, I'm only asking because I love Tom Brady, and I've been a longtime Patriots fan, and I know Alex would remember.
Who won this year, Steve?
Good old Brady.
Oh,
just not with the the Patriots. I still cheer for the Patriots.
It was that Super Bowl when they came back 24 points against Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, yeah, I got transferred during Brady's comeback. So, I get transferred to my new hospital. I'm there for the night. Like, that's it. In the morning, 6 a.m., I'm getting cut open for the first time ever. I've never had a surgery before.
Holy, okay.
So, that was kind of weird. Obviously, you Google what you're going to get done to you, right?
Oh, did you?
I had to know whether I didn't know if I was going to wake up with no scrotum or a big hole in my wiener.
You just have a dick and that's it?
That's it. No, it's not like that. They like, go through the top, kind of.
Oh, okay.
They go through where essentially your pubic hair grows, and they pull it out that way.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Oh, that's an interesting procedure.
You got a little 3-inch, 4-inch scar in there. Hurts like hell.
I would have never... Yeah, if you wouldn't have told me that, I would assume they just open the sack and take the ball.
No, man. Fish it out the top.
That's crazy.
Then you got to walk with a cane for 2 months.
Wow. You walked with a cane for 2 months? I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. They cut through, feel yourself right there and give yourself a good poke and just try then try walking in February in Calgary. So, yeah.
Sheesh.
Walked with a cane.
That's crazy, man.
And then that was... That was February, so that would have been February 6th, the Monday. And I hung out in the hospital for a few more days, walking around, making sure I could move.
Yeah.
Weaning myself off the pain meds from the last week of my traumatic life.
Yeah. Because
the pain is going away.
Right.
And Monday morning, I go for chemo. I met my doctor Friday, and Monday morning, I was plugged into the machine.
So before we get into the chemo stuff, what was the feeling knowing that you had to lose a nut? You know, as a man, you know, it's like it's your manhood. This is, you know, that's my shit.
Soldiers.
Yeah, really. You know,
it really is. Come on now.
You know, like was it just part of the process? You were relieved, like, okay, this is part of the execution of me not losing my life, or are you still like, oh my God, I'm losing one of my boys. I'm losing a ball.
No.
What's it going to look like? Is my wife still going to want to touch it?
Aaron's obviously was such good support through this whole thing. So she was usually there when we were talking to doctors and whatnot. And
yeah.
Aaron was there when the doctor asked if I wanted a prosthetic.
Oh, yeah.
You can get those.
That's right. I've heard about that.
No, I had no idea. Honestly.
You didn't? No, they can throw a fake nut in there.
I mean, it makes sense with the year
but
that
I heard
we're
the
in
body can reject it and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, so there's chances of complications, but it, you know, like you said, it's a macho thing. Well, I don't need to know I'm any more macho than I am. Like, I know I am.
Yeah.
Is it an aesthetic thing, though? Like, cause it
for
has,
some
it
guys,
no
it is.
Function,
no,
obviously.
No,
function.
Obviously not. No.
So, oh,
it's
wow.
Just so you have two freaking balls in the sack.
That's a look thing. Wow.
So Aaron's there with me when I get asked this question, and I look straight at her, and she goes, can you take both and just leave me with the goods? And the doctor's like, no, we can't take both.
Your wife is funny.
That's exactly what she said.
It's like, just have a dink.
I don't like testicles anyway.
Well, when I think maybe she was scared that you'd get it again or something.
That's another option too, is to get both of them removed. Yeah. I did not.
That would be so bizarre.
And then what though? Is that like you can't, but you can, and then what? You know what I mean? Like you can just not produce. Obviously, like that makes sense to me. You can't produce, like you can't have babies. Like,
no.
You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I'm not no fucking scientist here.
doctor. You don't have to. I think I guess
someone's smarter than me on a podcast.
Chemotherapy does a number on your sperm.
Right.
Bad.
Yeah.
That's,
I bet.
Normal, if you wanted to try to have kids after, it's a long flush out and you need to get your sperm tested to make sure it works. Or you're not going to hurt your wife. I had that vasectomy in December, so I'd already made that choice.
Right.
And further along down my cancer road, I have a surgery that we'll talk about then, because it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that. Wow. That's crazy.
It is. It really is.
I just can't imagine. I try to put myself in that place as a guy, you know, potentially losing a nut. I don't know how I'd react to it. But of course, when in retrospect, you're like, okay, lose a nut or die from cancer. I mean, that's obviously a no-brainer. But, you know, as an outsider looking into that situation, you're like, I don't know. It's tough to put yourself in that moment and feel probably what you went through. So great. I mean, great job on Aaron's part to be as supportive as she was. I mean, you'd expect that from any wife, but I'm sure there's stories out there where people are going through that type of stuff and maybe didn't have the most supportive partner. So good for her for being that partner for you and being there for all the visits. And, you know, obviously that was probably traumatic. And I guess just to, like, how do you think it was affecting your family at that time? What was it like for, obviously your kids were pretty young at the time. How old were?
Kennedy was born August 29, 2016.
Right.
So
okay.
What, 9 months?
Yeah. So Kennedy was
9 months before my diagnosis.
And then Jacob's like one.
Yeah.
Jacob's and then Hunter's one, what, five at the time?
Yeah.
So I guess the kids weren't, really didn't, like,
they knew
dad's
they
got cancer.
Was sick. No, they didn't even know that.
Yeah. Okay.
They just knew dad was sick.
Right.
We can make him sick. So I was living in the basement of the Cranston house there.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't basically, during chemo,
your
immune system's destroyed, right?
Right, yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah, you got pretty much nothing left.
Yeah, nothing. So, quarantined myself, much like now.
Yeah.
Quarantined myself in the basement.
You're practiced up for COVID.
I'm used to this. So yeah, but that's when it really started to hit me hard. Mentally.
Right.
During chemo.
Right, yeah.
Everything blurred together. Everything. Days, nights, sickness, illness, feeling good, feeling bad. It was 12 weeks.
You had to go through 12 weeks of chemo.
12 weeks of chemo.
And that was the entirety of the chemo, was just those 12 weeks?
That was my dose of chemo.
Oh, okay. Now, how
and
do
then
they
reevaluate.
Is it specifically for the type of cancer that you get a certain... Like, is chemo the same? Maybe you know this is just a curious question. Is chemo the same for everybody?
No.
Oh, okay.
Different cancers have different
degrees and levels of the magnitude.
But chemo itself, like, I don't even know. Can you explain, like, what chemo even is? Like, what, when I think of chemo, I don't even know. I know you were posting Mr. Funnybag there.
No, it's Dr. Skinny. It's
oh, yeah, sorry, Dr. Skinny.
It's radiation, though.
When you're right? getting your it's chemo. Well, he's going to tell you what's going on.
Chemo and radiation are different.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Chemotherapy is essentially a controlled poison in your body to kill the things you want to kill. Tumors. I'm not a doctor either or a scientist, so feel free to Google anything you need to, but this is what I understood. I had three types of poisons pumped into my body through an IV.
Three
liters Whoa. Of this stuff.
3 liters?
No.
No, three different types, but liters, of, liters of it. He got Mr. Skinny, wow. Dr. The Skinny
big,
Bag.
The big bags of it pumped into you. 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then you're sent home Wednesday with a bottle. Every night you're sent home with a bottle attached to you that's slowly pushing more in. And then when you come home, that we come back the next day, you get your cycle again.
Jesus Christ.
So you do that for 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday, you got to come back just to take the bottle off and go home.
Jesus.
And then you do that. 3 weeks later, you do the same cycle.
Wow.
Chemotherapy tends to stay in your body for like... Some people, long time, 6-8 weeks at a time. So every wow. time you go, it's compounding.
So you're getting sicker and sicker.
Sicker and sicker and sicker from your medication.
Oh my God. That's wretched.
And being a bigger guy, relatively fit, but a big guy, my oncologist was giving me a lot.
Yeah.
A higher, you're bigger dose.
How heavy, what do you weigh?
6'1", 230.
Yeah.
So pretty big, got a lot to me, and I was able to handle a little bit more than Steve here at 150.
Hey, whoa, 170. 170.
Proud of it, just so you know. Yeah. Proud of it.
No, look at these pipes. Hey, jacked.
So yeah, so that was the start. That was the process of chemo. And
so for 12, so every week for 12 weeks, it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the 3 days, you go back Thursday, get the bottle out, and then you come back, you know, the next Monday, and you start the process over, and you had to do that for 12 straight weeks, essentially.
Almost. There okay. were four separate sessions, 3 weeks apart. So it was a total of 12 weeks.
Oh, that's why it took you so damn long.
That's why it took so long.
Okay.
But that's when it was the hardest for me, I think, obviously.
Yeah.
Because like
you're getting poisoned.
You lose your hair. Your skin goes white. You smell things you never smelled before. I had to tell my wife to stop cooking supper one night because I was puking my guts out because it's like she's just frying onions. And
oh, wow.
I'm losing it downstairs. Like, I need to get outside.
No way.
Yeah. It increases some of your senses. My sense of smell was off the charts.
That's unreal. I've never heard of that.
No.
I've never actually heard of that.
It's wild.
That sounds wild. So what was the entire timeline then? It was 12 weeks, but like, so I guess it was like, that's a 9-month process or something like that. A year process, I guess, if you relatively do the math, right?
No. You're confused.
Well, there's 3 weeks breaks in between, I thought, or something. So that's like...
You get your chemo.
Yeah.
Then you have a 1, 2, then you get your chemo.
Oh, I see.
2 weeks, third week, get your chemo. It's a 12, the total process is 12 weeks.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's my dose, then I get reevaluated.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So
I'll just go back to what I kind of asked before, and I suppose I'm reiterating now. Let's just get a little deep, man, because I'm so curious, because the mind is so powerful, and that's what this podcast is really about at its core. Just give the audience, give us a scope into your mindset, like that time, that whole time from beginning to like, okay, now I'm like a survivor, like I'm out, I'm cured, I'm good to go. They give you the green light, like proceed with Alex's life. Like what, that whole point, that whole scope, man, that whole time frame, like what were you telling yourself? Like, were you doing affirmations? Were you telling yourself like, I'm going to get through this? Were you like, what's going on? Like, I'm so scared. Like all this stuff. Was it negative? Was it positive? Like, just give us kind of a little bit of insight with that.
And well, and to add in, I want to, like, I just the chemo portion for me, because he didn't get green light for a while after that.
That's what I'm saying.
So I'd be more interested to know, like, what was the mindset, exactly what Taylor just asked, but so specifically during that chemo process.
I got to split that up, Taylor's question, into two parts, like Steve-O did. The chemo was torture. It was when I was at my worst. I didn't cry until the day after my cardiac arrhythmia on Valentine's Day, which was my second day of chemo. I overdosed on dexamethasone, which is an anti-nausea drug. I took too much of it before I went to chemo in the morning, and then they just gave me a whole bunch more.
Oh, shit.
And by the afternoon, my heart didn't know what to do.
Oh, wow. So this was like a subscription pills that you were given?
My prescriptions, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't managing them properly.
Oh, okay.
And I was sick in the morning. Because I didn't take him in the middle of the night.
Okay.
I woke up, I'm like, oh man. Had some anti-nausea meds.
Yeah.
Went to chemo, where they give you anti-nausea meds.
Oh.
OD. It's not like I was unconscious and dying, but it's still considered an overdose. Right. My heart went from normal 70 beats per minute to 260.
260?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
In the matter of time it took to reach for your glass of water.
Whoa, that fast?
That fast.
Holy crap, man. That must have been a wild experience.
I made eye contact with the nurse that was walking by, and true to their form, they knew exactly what to do.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, she came in, she saw my heart rate. I don't know how long it was, but the next thing I remember was the crash cart, and then another nurse in my face, like, it's like I was pregnant, and she's like doing these Kegel maneuvers with me.
No way.
Trying to reset the pressure in my chest to trick my heart into pumping properly again.
Oh,
wow. While the crash cart nurse is putting an IV in to stop my heart and reset it.
Holy crap.
That was option two. So the nurse gets me pumped up, and I do like, she's like, pretend you're taking a dump. So I bear down, and I was able to calm it down myself.
No way.
Without getting reset.
I'm having like chills thinking about that.
Yeah, man. Without having to get reset. Oh, and this is on Valentine's Day, ladies. So
yeah,
you can imagine how my wife felt when I called her from the emergency room in Rocky View Hospital, as opposed to my relatively comfortable chemotherapy chair.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was day two.
Oh, man, that weighs heavy on me.
Going back to what you were talking about with the mindset.
Yeah.
When I got home after that stretch of chemo, that was the first time I cried.
First time in the whole...
First time I let her rip.
No way. Wow. Yep. I say no way, wow, I mean, because I think it's a little surprising that it took that long to cry, that you had that strength for so long. You know, because I feel like if it was me, I would have cried as soon as they said I had cancer or that I had a tumor. I probably would have been bawling like a baby.
I think most people would. And there's no shame in that. It's just, that's a heavy thing. And that's why I ask. I'm like, what is the mindset behind that? Because you can just be, you can play like you said, Alex, you can play the woe is me. Yes. You can play poor me. Oh my God, please someone save me. And this sucks. But it's like, the mind, that's why I ask, because the mind is so powerful. The mind and the way you treat your mind and what you tell yourself can really be the medicine after it all over it all over the chemo to really get yourself out of it. And that's we don't need to go down that hole, but there's I mean, you'll have to do your own research and hop on the old internet and the old interwebs of people literally taking over their mind and telling themselves that they can do this and they shouldn't do this. And, you know, just being so compelling with their mind that, man, it just they overcome the absolute worst. And it's so powerful. So, man, I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah, it's that 12-week stretch was, I don't know if it felt like 12 minutes or 12 years. It was just a continual routine every day. Wake up, try not to get sick, take your meds, try to eat, pull some more hair out because it's falling out anyway. Like, it was just a continual living in this basement of my own home. Messed on chemo. It was just, it's not a spot anybody would really want to be in. There was never any bad thoughts that ran through my head, but it was more of a, oh man, I'm stuck in this dungeon still, sick of Netflix. I could really use a new video game type stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it wasn't until later it got a little bit deeper, but yeah, the chemo was hard.
It was, and it was mostly just being sick, I guess.
Just being sick, yeah. The sickest you've ever been for 12 weeks and right. Getting sicker and sicker every day.
Oh man, I can't imagine. I can't imagine anybody who's got to, maybe you'd agree with this. I mean, when we talk about the mindset a little bit, that I think probably in those moments or when you're in that place, you know, and I can't speak for anybody who's ever been there and maybe didn't come out on the other side of the equation in a good way, but that's probably where you either find your strength to survive and fight off what you're going through, or you find a way to, yeah, maybe feel sorry for yourself and not come out as good on the other side. And maybe the cancer worsens or something. I don't know if there's correlation there, but it just sounds like you went through the shit, but you dealt with it the best way that you could. And you said your thoughts, because I would assume in a lot of ways people would want to just die at that moment and maybe want to commit suicide or just end it and be like, when's this going to be over? I'd rather just die at this particular time. And it doesn't sound like you ever had those types of thoughts.
None of that for me ever. Even when I was in my worst, always joking about it. Like,
well, yeah, you're posting the doctor skinny bag thing was very,
yeah, it was
lighthearted, and you couldn't help but laugh when you posted it. But you know, your buddy's going through cancer and he's posting this bag of chemo bag and having a laugh himself.
Yeah, like it's like to touch on what Taylor said, it's all about your mindset. Like, you can always be bummed out and it's just gonna make you feel shittier.
Yeah.
If you're pumped up about being sick, I mean, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
So you can go either way with that. And I chose to be a little bit happier than the average, I don't know, sick guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so.
So that must have been hard to just be a dad at that time too, I guess.
I really wasn't a dad. My two youngest were being full-time with Aaron, and Hunter was in like play school.
Right.
Grandma was helping a lot and couldn't really even hang out with the kids. The little germ factories, like, yeah. You get sick when
snot factories.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I get sick when
germ farms.
I only saw them maybe once a day. Like, I would only ever join the family meal at dinner time. Come down, have three bites of salad, and say hi to everybody, and go back down to the dungeon. And
yeah, it must have been tough to really eat and stuff during those times too, hey. What would you say was the hardest point? I get you're sick, it's the sickest you've ever been, but you know, what were some of the other hard things that you went through at that time? Do you think that was some, like, if you summed up a few things, maybe a couple,
if you're sick,
two or three hardest type of things that you were going through, if you wanted to pinpoint it on a couple things. Obviously you're sick, we know you're sick, that was really tough.
So if you're sick, you're gonna obviously find the things that make you feel better.
Yeah.
You're going to research some of the things that you're going to go through before you do.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Obviously, right?
Well, I don't know. Not everybody researches here as inquisitive as you are.
Maybe they should. Yeah. So I knew I was going to be, this chemo is going to feed on my body. And if I don't feed it food, my body food, it's going to eat my body away. And I didn't really want that.
Of course not.
Yeah. And we've said it, 17 times? You're going to feel sick.
Yeah, yeah.
So medical marijuana became my best friend.
Oh.
High doses of THC to get me hungry, to eat a giant fruit smoothie first thing in the morning.
Oh, wow.
I could get the whole thing down. All the vitamins and everything I needed for my body to... I gained weight during chemo.
You gained weight?
20 pounds.
Shut up.
Went from 230
to 250. That's got to be the opposite of what most people go through.
That's what I was... That's about. Yeah, that's where my mind goes.
I gained 20 pounds.
So you would say... I'm glad I asked that question because I guess in a way you'd say medical marijuana was the giant... The thing you needed... You know, kind of the catalyst to make sure that you're eating your food.
So I got my prescriptions every time I went for my chemo. The stuff that average Joe would use.
Yeah.
I didn't use any of it at all.
Okay.
After I OD'd on dexamethasone, I didn't touch it again.
Good for you. Okay.
It's not an addictive drug like opioids or heroin.
But still,
I made the conscious yeah. decision
Let's
to...
not do this twice.
Yeah. Uh-uh. I was... found medical marijuana, the oils,
concentrates.
Yeah,
okay.
Eating it.
Wow.
As soon as I woke up in the morning, 6 a.m., drinking it. 10 o'clock, 2 pints of fruit smoothie down. Wow. So, yeah, it helped me out so much.
It is crazy. So going forward, is there something that the doctors and the nurses and, the whole professional panel, if you will, for lack of better terms, going forward, did they tell you this is kind of you should incorporate this into your lifestyle going forward or no?
No. But when I mentioned it to my oncologist, she was pro 100%. She got me legal, carded up, websites to order whatever you needed from, and she was all about it. She's like, that works for you, do it.
Okay.
100%, no hesitation from my main cancer doctor. She's like, just don't smoke it. Chemo was bad for your
sense.
Lungs. The chemo that was bad for your lungs, don't smoke it, eat it. And I was like, sure.
Wow.
So that whole 12 weeks I was talking about, when I was ripped on chemo, I was also taking quite a bit of marijuana oil. It was fantastic.
Well, it goes to show there's a lot of, we don't have to go into this type of topic, but there's a lot of stigma around marijuana and its usage, especially with CBD oils and things like that. And there's so much negative, ignorant, and sometimes even uneducated people when it comes to the devil's green grass and all that shit. But, the more and more times you really look at, and you're a perfect example of it, there's so many, if it's not abused, in a sense, there's a lot of really great qualities to marijuana and its usage for humans, especially when it comes to CBDs and, being able to eat it, edibles, whatever. There's just so much of a negative stigma around marijuana. I've always been a supporter of people utilizing marijuana for medical purposes because, it's proven. And when you decide that you're not going to be, completely ignorant to the fact that that's actually scientifically proven,
That's a completely other podcast, I think. That might be episode 25 or something.
Well, I don't know if we want to talk too much about marijuana on our podcast, but it's one of those things sometimes you got to let your guard down and research and look at things. The reason why I wanted to say it like that is if you're somebody that maybe is going through cancer and you're so, ignorant to the fact that medical marijuana, you have this thing about weed and weed's this devil's grass, but it can ultimately, have you eating food and possibly help you get on the other side of the equation. Just make sure you're looking at everything with an open and you know, educated eye, not a, you know, prejudged, uneducated eye, I guess you could say. I mean, that's really the only reason why I wanted to point that out, is it sounds like medical marijuana was ultimately the answer for you being able to eat your food and, you know, ultimately not lose weight. You gained weight. That's how many people gain weight going through chemo? There's got to be, so that's
got to be like at 2% or like, something like that.
Yeah, like you have to be on like crazily on the other side of that statistic, I'm sure.
Well, the reason I think you point that out, man, Steve, is because that is something that a nurse and doctor should be documenting, right? Is like,
yeah.
Is wow, like you gained weight. Yeah, this is abnormal. This is the opposite
right.
of the average, I guess, patient.
Yeah.
But yet, okay, this is what happened because of this, but like you, yeah, you gained weight. So it's very important. So yeah, I mean, we can touch on so much of that. I think we covered a lot of good bases on that. And the way I want to leave this, I guess, the last thing there for you, Alex, is anybody going through maybe some chemo right now or some sort of health concerns similar to yours, I mean, what's some advice, what's some suggestions, what's some words of encouragement would you give to such an individual right now?
I would say, Taylor, just try it. I mean, I was prescribed roughly $15,000 worth of prescriptions throughout my whole 12-week. And that doesn't...
$15,000?
And that doesn't include what they gave me in the cancer centers. So... the $60 bottle of oil was a no-brainer to see if it worked.
And now, like, you're just all covered for that kind of stuff in Alberta because of your healthcare kind of thing? Is that how... But, like, obviously not the CBD, but I mean, like you said, $15,000 worth of
stuff. I work for a pretty good company and had pretty good benefits and had 100%...
Oh, it's covered through the benefits.
100% prescription coverage. So I didn't have to pay for anything. I got all the air miles, though. It's pretty sweet.
Hey, there you go.
There we go.
And next thing you know, Alex is on a flight with his family.
Yeah, after fighting off cancer. I mean, why not? They deserve it. That's crazy.
So yeah, so chemo's over. I got to do something, man. Anything. And just so happens that Taylor mentioned I'm a process operator. So my plant's down for turnaround, fixing. I get in there, talk to the safety people, and I say, hey, can I come walk around plant site and do JTOs and watch people work and be a safety guy? And they're like, sure. I'm like, full disclosure, I had a 50-50 chance of having to get surgery after chemo. Told my company that too, and they're like, well, if you got to have surgery, you just go on long-term disability, and it's just sick. It's the next part of this.
Right.
So go to work. I walked around for a week or so. Pretty sick beard. My hair's going back. Like,
okay.
Felt good getting some steps in and get a call.
Yeah.
You have surgery on Monday. You're getting a retroperitoneal lymph node dissection. You're going to be out for a while.
Good Lord, what a word.
Yeah, what a sentence.
A sentence, yeah. And obviously, you didn't know what that was before.
Oh. And if you're out there, please don't look that one up unless you have a strong stomach.
You said you Googled everything else, Al. Did you Google that?
I didn't have to because my doctor had it all up on a computer. The surgeon that was going to cut me open when I first saw him for my first meeting.
Like consultation type of thing?
Sure. The first time I go to his big, fancy, expensive office with all the Mercedes-Benz cars out front and stuff, and I go up top and I meet him, and he has it all up, everything, step by step, like a PowerPoint presentation, kind of. And he says, 98% survival rate. I've done 74 of them, and have not lost anybody. I'm the only person in Alberta that does these.
Whoa. So that guy's
That's a big deal.
So you're feeling okay.
Yeah. You're 98%. All right.
I mean, good hands.
So this is going to come back to Taylor's talking about kids and the ability to make them again.
Yeah.
During this procedure, they mess around with so many nerves in that lymph node section behind your abdomen. It redirects your sperm.
redirects it.
Yeah. So instead of it coming out traditionally, redirects it to your bladder.
Oh.
So that's now weird. When I ejaculate, nothing comes out. It's redirected into my bladder.
So it's like dust, kind of? Or like air?
Now, I have to pause there, man. I'm so curious. Because us three men, we know what it feels like.
And there's
what
a show.
What does that feel like? Does it feel like the same? It's just obviously not literally projected. I mean, you know what I mean? I'm so curious.
Feels the same as it did before. But actually having sex is better because you know you don't have to pull out.
Wow.
You're going all the time. That's the best part. and even if it still was going to come, like if you're going to ejaculate traditionally, Jesus. It's messless. It's
Taylor obviously loves that answer. This is what I
picture. Unreal. I never knew.
I actually kind of just picture, I didn't pause it. No. I actually just picture like because there's nothing coming out and it's kind of, I just picture like
a puff of smoke, eh? A little good old college try.
I just that's picture, like, hilarious.
The penis breathe, giving a breath or something.
Oh, not man. Quite, boys. Not quite. No.
Oh, that so was good. Funny. Taylor okay, loved that answer. No, clearly.
That was good.
I didn't
want
to talk about it earlier because I wanted a true response. About it.
Oh no! I can't fake this.
Okay, the surgery itself, though, was to get that tumor, though?
So it's
why you said there's a 50-50 chance you're ever going to have to get this surgery, but...
So my... After getting reevaluated after... Re-evaluated after the 12 weeks of chemo, they look at your tumors and your tumor markers in your blood to see how much progress they've done. And right. My three small tumors shrunk. They got smaller. Chemo worked.
Okay.
My big tumor didn't grow anymore.
Okay.
So they're like, we're going to get it. So they go, they do the surgery then,
right,
to remove the damaged part of my lymphatic system back there. And since they're in there anyway, they might as well grab the tumors.
Right. Right.
That's what they did.
Of course, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wild. So back to this crazy surgery word.
Retroperitoneal lymph node dissection.
Excellent.
For everybody else out there, they cut me open from sternum to groin. They're nice enough to go around the belly button. And they basically remove your digestive system, your intestines, and they put them on your chest, essentially. They do the surgery in behind, put everything back together, and staple you back up.
Sheesh.
57 staples, to be exact.
57. I knew it was a lot, because obviously I saw, but...
Yeah, 57 staples.
Is that your new favorite number?
No, I hate that number.
That's I don't blame what you.
I hate both of those numbers.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, this is the next part of, and in my opinion, it was the worst, the hardest.
Worse than chemo?
Well, yeah. I was able to be out and about doing normal dad things, like a hunchback. Can't move, out of shape, can't go up the stairs, can't pick up a kid.
For how long?
Fuck. Surgery was June 12th. I started rehab, like with a rehabilitation, like physiotherapy.
Yeah.
I started that in September.
Oh, whoa.
So I didn't start working out my scar, my abdomen, my body for like 3 months.
So you're at home basically doing...
Nothing. Yeah, like
just whatever.
Healing.
Wow.
And it was the worst kind of healing, friends, you could ever have.
Oh my god.
Cut me open, right?
Yeah, that's I mean,
so
sternum to the top of your junk.
Just sitting with proper posture was having so much pressure on that scar and that wound that it was painful.
Oh, that actually makes me uncomfortable thinking about that.
So I was hunched over. So it didn't stretch.
Oh,
like my first day of physio in September, I couldn't lay flat on my stomach.
Wow. Oh, it just makes me so...
And that's when...
Squeamish that's thinking when about that, bro.
That's basically when the drinking started.
Around that June time or whatever.
June-ish.
Once to kind of cope, to kind of just, you hey, betcha. This is my, you know...
There's beer and whiskey down at the corner store.
Yeah, well, let's go. Yeah.
I'm doing nothing but sitting at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I did, man.
Just drink.
So bring us to real quick. Maybe there's a gap here that we want to explore. That's fine. But bring us to present day. I mean, how do you feel now? How does that posture feel now? How does that scar feel now? How does mobility feel now?
I can do like that sexy chick stripper pose where you push your entire torso up off the ground.
You're like a seal. And keep your groin down.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Just like that. Yeah. Full mobility. I can't do golf. That.
What?
I can't do that. You're going to learn today.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I can golf. Podcast episode. I can do sit-ups. I mean, I'm a normal human being with a giant scar on his abdomen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good Probably even you. Stronger now that I actually work out more than I ever used to. So there's right. that too.
Right. That's so crazy.
I love it. This is the shit I love, to be honest. This is the raw, like, it's the transformation, right? Because you can sit in the woe is me part, the poor me, like I'm injured, I'm weak, but like, boom. Like I just chose to rise above. Like here I am, I'm stronger, like I can do this. Like, yeah, I got right. my mobility back. I love it, man.
Good for you. I love that.
Now you obviously, as you touched on, you didn't feel sorry for yourself, but you did go through a coping time that was
100%
not ideal. I mean, I guess it could have been worse.
Could have been worse.
But
could have told someone sooner that I was struggling. Like even my wife or my mom. Yeah. Or you even.
Yeah.
I could have said something. I didn't. I went from, I'd say August, November, basically drunk 3 or 4 times a week. Every night. Well, 3 or 4 times a week for sure.
Okay.
Yep. For those 3 or 4 months.
At least it wasn't every day. Yeah, right? Well, that's good.
Well, and that's great. That's another avenue that I'd like to explore if you don't mind, man. I mean, okay, 3 or 4 months, right? Is that what you said?
Roughly, yeah. Yeah. Close.
So what got you out of that? Because it's so easy, like you pretty much formed a habit then. So what got you out of that, right? Not to make it 5, 6, 7, 8 months.
This is one of the most horrible stories I'll ever say in my life. I drove home from Calgary with my kids in my car, wasted. I was brought to the hospital that night by my wife, and I was in emergency all night because I was wasted.
Crazy. I kind of remembered that story, but not exactly that story.
I didn't touch booze after that for about 6 months. Cold turkey.
Whoa.
Christmas, birthday, didn't have a single drop of booze.
Wow, good for you, man. That's, I know that's hard to express right now. And, you know, I think it's needed because it's vulnerability and it's shown that, you know, everybody makes mistakes, but, you know, it's the path to really becoming your best self, which is once again, what this podcast is all about. And, you know, I'm not saying that's what it takes, to involve someone's kids, but, you know, everyone has their wake up call in different avenues and different lights and different ways. And I can share my own and Steve can share his own too. We got stories and episodes of our lives, but you know, it's in the past for a reason and, we are who we are, because of that. So I just want to thank you for sharing that real quick, man. That's a big deal.
People need to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not a proud moment for you.
Fuck no.
I guess the good thing is, you know, in a way that your wife, took the reins a little bit there and was like, listen, you know, more or less like,
yeah,
this is unacceptable.
She threatened to leave me.
She did at that particular time?
After the trip home from town.
That happened. She drove you to the hospital.
Yeah.
You said, and she knew you were drunk and that's why she took you to the hospital?
No. We weren't sure what was wrong. I knew what was wrong. Nobody else knew it was wrong.
I knew I was drunk. To you.
I knew I was drunk. Nobody else did.
Oh, shit.
Until I was at the hospital and the doctors were like, he's probably this fucking drunk guy. Like, that's all you did. Like, you're just wasting our resources and our people by bringing us a drunk guy.
Right.
So
they weren't too happy, apparently.
No. But that was when I finally started reading self-help books.
You started reading self-help books?
I read a couple.
I'm proud of you for that, Al.
Not good ones, just like the basis. And I don't think I finished them, but I got the premise about it.
But still, I mean,
it's an attempt and you took a shot, so who cares?
And I finally went to go see a shrink, head doctor.
Someone, yeah, tell us about that. Yeah.
Someone to talk to that wasn't my wife or my mom.
Yeah, somebody unbiased, I guess.
Professional,
maybe.
Right? A professional. Someone that hears this stuff all the time. And I needed some kind of closure or some kind of answer as to what I did. And she heard my story. Kind of the same thing I'm telling you guys. And other things that stress me out about life, money, relationships, stuff like that. Things you go to see a shrink for.
Yes, right.
And she diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
Near-death experience.
Obviously makes sense, yeah.
Coping with my own personal way. And already starting the first few steps that she would have already recommended before I came to see her.
Right, okay.
Stop with the vices. Obviously stop drinking.
Yeah.
Slow down anyway.
Yeah.
Make better decisions.
Right.
And that's when I started running too. Again, started jogging. And that was wake up, do my thing, get it out of the way, and have it done.
Right. That's good. So morning routine.
Morning routine, starting the process of getting into that morning routine. Never had one before. It's very healthy for most people.
It's always something recommended by highly successful people in the world, that's for sure.
And most people just slowly add to their routine, change it up as they go. Mm-hmm, so that's what I ended up starting with. I started by running, listening to my music, going out there, getting my jog in. And I ended up losing, how much weight did I lose, Steve, at that time? I went from...
I know that it was quite a bit because you were a lean, mean...
I was 251.
Cunningham machine at that time.
I was 250 or so after chemo.
Yeah.
And after...
You were like... Weren't you all the way down to like 215 or something like that?
I was down to 205.
205 it was.
And I stayed there for 6 months until I was like, yeah, I can do this. And then I started eating cookies again. And, you know, that happens, right? So...
Yeah. I think you might have been somewhat deserving of a little bit of... rewarding yourself, I guess, in a sense, after what you went through, because it obviously wasn't a very good moment. I mean, a lot of people choose liquor.
It's easy.
Because you can get it everywhere.
It's readily available.
Oh, well, come on. Especially in Alberta, I can't speak for every province or where everybody, every country and stuff. There's probably a liquor store.
There's more liquor stores than schools. Come on.
There's more liquor stores than anything. Yeah. If you think about it, there's more liquor stores than any other facilities. Yeah.
There's more liquor stores than gas stations for sure.
Yeah. Right? There's more liquor stores than grocery stores.
So, yeah, it's easy to get. It tastes delicious. Come on now.
Well, especially because there's so many fuzzy, different kinds.
Right? Exactly. Different curves. Exactly.
Come on. We should be promoting liquor here too much.
No. Don't go down that hole, ladies and gentlemen. But no. So. Wow, that's huge, man. I really give you credit in sharing that. That's very powerful. And I know a lot of people can relate from that. So thanks again for sharing that.
Yeah, I mean, that surgery would have been a very traumatic experience. And I can't say that I would have been any better in that moment. I mean, I guess one thing, you know, that was awesome or, you know, that was a great thing to have in your life at that particular time was a supportive partner and, you know, a family maybe. I don't know. You know, if you would have been just a single solo guy by yourself, you what would have been the catalyst? So, I mean, in a way, you know, life had that going on for you to make sure, you had somebody that cared about you.
And to them, I was getting better. I was at the end of that road, right? Yeah. They're seeing me as recovering from surgery, recovering from cancer, getting better every day, this and that.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm chugging Mickey's of whiskey every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So they didn't really see it. So you basically hit it.
100%.
Yeah. Well, obviously you're not going to be in front of, that's kind of the alcoholic, if you weren't really alcoholic, but that's kind of the alcohol
substance abuser,
it, right? Like you don't highlight it, if especially because you're possibly ashamed for dealing with it that way. So you hide it. I mean, my dad's an alcoholic. I've seen it firsthand for the last 15 years of my life. What people typically do with alcohol because it's so easy. Yeah, you slam a Mickey. How hard was that to do? It took you 5 minutes, and then you're fucking boom, annihilated.
You got a buzz.
You're buzzed or you're drunk out of your mind, depending on what you're chugging. Mm-hmm. Right,
whiskey,
some Everclear,
you know, and you
you need that escape from reality of dealing with the shit you're going through, and it's
the easiest way.
You know, it's relatively cost effective solution. So, but I'm really glad, brother, that you made that change and started seeking out help. And I mean, see, I didn't realize for the longest time that you went the therapy route. Did you find that it was, you know, I guess what made you choose therapy, and then how did you find that it really helped you? Because I know that, and you know, before you answer, I know that a lot of people are just too proud to make that choice and I've been that way too. I mean, truth be told, I've talked to therapists about some certain things that I've gone through, and I've made that choice because just having that unbiased opinion, especially when you're going through some, you know, personal mental anguish and whatever's, you know, affecting you in that way. And a lot of people, and even I was this way, is you're like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, only crazy people go talk to a therapist. You know, I'm not nuts or whatever. You know, it's almost like you have to swallow that pride. And I don't know if that's the same feeling that you had, that you just like, you know, kind of like, okay, I'm just going to swallow this. I'm going to go talk. I'm not, you know, cause it's almost like people think of it as a sign of weakness, right? I have to go talk to somebody about my problems, you know, so I'm a big pussy for doing it or whatever. So I guess, you know, back to my question, like what made you really ultimately make that decision? And, you know, how did you find it helped you or whatever, right? Like what was, you know, just kind of, I guess that would be my question there. Like, why'd you choose it?
It was part of the agreement with my wife, first of all.
Oh, she brought that up, isn't it?
Well, it was in the verbal agreement I'd made with my wife, is I was going to go talk to somebody.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I actually went to talk to my family doctor first, and he recommended a lovely psychiatrist that I went to see 4 times. And I think I just needed, this is the wrong word, but vindication. Someone educated to tell me that I had a problem. To tell me that what I did was normal. And I, like I said earlier, I'd already started the right steps into getting better.
Okay.
Having somebody, a professional, a doctor, tell you that you're not the only one. Someone else has done this.
Right.
Your case isn't all that bad. Like, okay. Really, like,
yeah.
There's people in way worse situations than you. You just drink a little, and I'm glad to see you here and everything. But I mean, you're kind of a 5 out of 10 on the old scale of people that have real addiction problems.
Sorry, I'll cut you right there. Sorry, man. I just to pinpoint that. Did she say that specifically?
No.
No. Okay. I'm just because that's super important. I think if she, because that's. That just shows a level of like not even you, but like what she deals with.
No,
what she's saw.
Me
has seen. Sorry.
Me talking to her made me realize that if you think about it in the long run, it was a momentary lapse in judgment, and
right.
That's how I dealt with it. Yeah. I'm not a 20-year heroin addict or something like that.
Right.
That's talking going through the 10-step process of rehab or something like that.
Right.
I'm not that person. I did it myself. I didn't go to rehab or anything. I went to see a shrink, a head doctor.
Right.
To hear her say, it's okay.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Okay.
So that's how that went.
Yeah. No, I found that, you know, yeah. I mean, sometimes you just need that person that doesn't know you to give you some advice or to talk to you a little bit, because yeah, I mean, when it's family and friends, sometimes it's, you know, there's a biased opinion or, you know, point of view from people that, you know, are in your life consistently. And sometimes it's hard to take criticism and advice from your loved ones and family sometimes, because that's just the reality, right? Like sometimes it's just tough to take the criticism from them. So when you go get it from somebody that doesn't really know you, and then they're kind of like, you know, you're doing well, and but, you know, maybe your family is kind of right. You need to change. And you're like, okay, all right. Well, it makes perfect sense. I knew this, but I just needed to hear it from somebody else.
Yeah,
that exactly. Wasn't somebody close to me.
And admitting it to your friends and family
and
is harder,
oh,
I would think, than admitting it to a stranger. Like, right, if I had to call you and tell you that,
yeah,
why do you think I didn't do it? Right?
That's a fair point.
That's exactly why.
Yeah, that is a fair point, because you kind of know how that conversation is going to go.
Exactly. It's going to end up in a fight.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to hear from you for 3 months. It's going to happen, and I don't want that to happen. I'd rather just not say anything, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I guess you're saying it now, so that's good.
4 years later.
I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. Awesome. I have to commend you on, you know, just to sum up this conversation that I've had with you at this point. You know, it sounds like your mindset was good the whole time. Like you went through it, but it really sounds like, and again, what this podcast is all about is just the mindset thing, right? Like it sounded like you went through the crap, but you never let the, you know, what you were going through negatively affect you. You know, you did and you didn't. I mean, your only real lapse in, you know, maybe having a pity party for Alex was that 3-4 month period of time where you chose to drink. Other than that, you got this cancer diagnosis and you were just like, okay, what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? I'm just going to, okay. Like the thought of dying never really was, sounds like it was never really something that was focused on very much.
Never.
The thought of killing yourself or anything that's really, really dark and heinous for thought processes wasn't really there. You're just like, okay, how do I fight this? What's the next step? I'm just going to do it. Okay, I'm going to go through some shit. I'm going to research the shit I'm going to go through so I'm somewhat prepared and I'm not just being blind to it. And then ultimately you came out on the other end and that's great, obviously, because I love you. So, you know, I'm happy that you got through that. But
I love you too, Steve.
Awesome. I appreciate that. I always love, I always tell my close friends I love them. I always like to do that. But I tell you I love you, Taylor, I think. I guess before we end the podcast episode, is there anything, Alex, that you would like to, you know, add, share, some things maybe you'd recommend to anybody that is, you know, maybe just got diagnosed, is currently going through it, that you think would be helpful to share that maybe we didn't cover just before we, you know, end the podcast today? I just want to give you an opportunity to, you know, have a final word on anything that maybe pops in your mind that we didn't talk about today.
Don't be afraid to reach out. There's tons of support groups in every community for every type of major disease, whether it's heart disease, cancer, even Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Don't be afraid to reach out. Get into some of those Facebook groups. Get into some of those Twitch streams that you can talk to people about you did the same thing with. And I've done it. Mm-hmm. Why not talk to other people about the same thing you had?
Yeah.
Make jokes about it. Like I'm in a Facebook group called Uniballers.
That's awesome.
And
one nutters.
every and the thing is we try to get together in Super Bowl.
Oh, that's cool.
Plan a party at a bar, something obviously didn't happen this year, but
yeah, with COVID, yeah.
Plan a party at a bar or something like that and we all get together and
that's pretty cool. I mean, so, I think there's definitely power in knowing you're not the only one sometimes.
For right? Sure, yeah.
There's always power in that.
You're never alone, and mental toughness is a forever thing.
And you can go there, and you're going to see other dudes just like you.
Yeah.
Seriously, you met me in the street right now, you'd never know what I've been through. And then it goes for that for everybody.
Yeah.
You can't just assume that just because you wear a brown t-shirt that you like the color brown.
Yeah.
Like it's just something as simple as that. So,
yeah. Yeah. There's a struggle going on in everybody's mind a lot of times, and you just don't know what that is, but they can look perfectly fine on the surface.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's huge. I just want to also, before we end this podcast, just shout out to everybody. I don't know the names of the people, obviously, and I'll never meet them, but I want to shout out to every single human being that helped my brother here fight off his cancer. Everybody in the hospitals, shout out to the medical community that supported Alex. Tom Baker Cancer Center, there we go. And every other individual that helped Alex along the ride, that got him on the other side, because Alex is not the only one that you have saved. But, you know, I think, you know, if I can pay some respect to the medical community and, you know, the great staff that the hospitals had in the Calgary area. I've heard a lot about Calgary having amazing cancer centers and things like that. But, you know, shout out to everybody. Thank you for saving my friend. And, you know, if somehow the universe can show the appreciation that I'm sending your way,
I'd love for you to receive that. So thank you so much. And I guess that's it, boys. So without, unless you have anything to add, Taylor, you're good.
I should have sat on a pillow.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. This concludes episode 11 of Wiredly Inspired. I appreciate everybody that, again, that listens to our podcast. And like always, check us out on Spotify. Tell all your friends. You know, obviously, if we share some great stories, we hope that you tell other people that'll check out our podcast, because, you know, we're hoping we're adding a lot of value out there. Follow us on Instagram. Check out Taylor and me on Instagram as well. Follow us. Leave some reviews. We want to hear your feedback. We want to know when we did a good podcast, when maybe we sucked or whatever, for lack of better words. We just want to hear all the feedback, because we want to know how we can grow this podcast, how we can provide more value, the guests that you like to hear from, and everything in between. Just make sure that you leave us those reviews and feedback, and we'd love to hear from all of you. And again, thanks everybody for tuning in, and till next time when we have episode 12, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.